Who do you want to be as a leader? What are the blind spots you're missing? If you had a magic wand and you could change anything about your workplace, what would you do with it? These are the kinds of questions we explore on Inspirational Leadership. I'm your host, Kristen Harcourt. I'm a keynote speaker, emotional intelligence coach, and leadership trainer who partners with executives and emerging leaders who want to achieve extraordinary results for themselves and their organizations. You're in the right place if you're ready to cultivate the self-awareness to be the leader you were born to be. Let's go on this journey together. Welcome to Inspirational Leadership. I'm your host, Kristen Harcourt. And today we have a very special episode. We are going to be talking about Work Human Live that happened in April and doing a recap because there are so many people who either got to go to Work Human, but they were at different sessions. And then people for a variety of reasons that didn't get to make it to the conference. And because my guest, who I will introduce in a second, and I are so passionate about this conference and what it's about and all the really, really good, meaningful conversations that happen in these sessions, we wanted to make sure that we could share this forward with all of you. So I today am going to be speaking with Angela Champ, who is a dear friend, and Angela has been going to Work Human. She's been 6 times. Many of you know that I've been to Work Human 7 times. So you have 2 super, super passionate, big fans of this conference and what it's all about. And I think, so Angela, let's just start with, from before we get into the conference and the content, what do you love so much about this conference? What do you think is different?
And honestly, any of the listeners out there, if you have not yet gone to Work Human, please try and plan to go for 2025. What I love about it is, first of all, the topics are so relevant to the issues that we are facing in the moment, in that year. You know, they tend to find topical topics, like when Me Too was really in the news, and this year's focus on artificial intelligence and how it impacts us. But what I really love about it is 2 things. One is that it's the people that go to this conference tend to all be very like-hearted in terms of really believing that we can make work a good, healthy, meaningful place where people find purpose and they add their value, because meaningful work is a really important part of a meaningful life. And the other part is they just have some great speakers. Never do I walk away without 5 or 6 aha moments that I can turn around and apply almost immediately to my work, to my practice, to my personal life. I just love it. I can't say enough about it.
Yeah, I know Eric Mosley, when he talks about it, he always says the Woodstock for HR. And I think it's so true, right? For people who really believe in people and culture and the impact that we can make and how we make these really powerful changes. When I first heard about this conference at 2015, I mean, they had me at Work Human, right? For just a name like that, I think it attracts people who really believe that there are ways that we can create really, really, really powerful shifts. And of course, these shifts don't just extend to our workplaces, because we have a bunch of humans in workplaces who also have relationships with people outside of work, in the world, in communities, in families. And I think it's really powerful. I think it attracts those kind of people. And so there's really, really good energy and collaboration and connections and having really powerful, deep conversations with your peers. I also like it compared to some conference. It feels very intentionally curated. You don't feel like it is, you're overscheduled, that you're moving from session to session. They're intentional around how they set up the agenda so that there is space in between. Doesn't feel like you have 10 sessions in one day. You might have, 5 to 7. There's places that when you're not in session, then it's not that you're running around looking at all of these trade shows, that you're being able to maybe just sit, go get your picture taken. What else would I say? Like, there's just
the
so
bookstore.
Many fun. The bookstore, like, that's a powerful thing that I've been to many different conferences. I haven't seen that. It's the experiential around the conference when you're not in sessions, I think is really, really good.
And the gratitude bar, I mean, they really live up to what they're trying to focus on, which is recognition and saying thank you to your colleagues and fellow humans. And so for those of you that haven't gone, they have every year they have a gratitude bar where any participant can go and recognize another participant or one of the speakers or one of the organizers and just give them a shout out, which becomes very public because you can see it on the feed, on the conference app. You can also see it on a wall. And it's very gratifying. You sit there and you watch what people are grateful for one another. And it actually fills you with the desire to express gratitude. So it's it's a very virtuous cycle. And I want to add too, you were talking about the people who it attracts a certain kind of person. I missed a couple of sessions because I ran into somebody in the hallway before I entered in and we started this conversation. And the conversation is so rich and engaging that you end up finding out all sorts of things that you weren't planning to. And unfortunately, you miss a session because you spent the last hour connecting with this person you wouldn't otherwise have met. And I just love that about WorkHuman.
Yeah. It creates these spontaneous moments that you wouldn't have when you're at work in your office, going from meeting to meeting, all of that. And sometimes I'm a big believer that that's meant to be, because I had that happen with a couple of sessions I missed, had these beautiful 1 hour conversations. It's like serendipitous. That's where I was meant to be in that moment. It's going to be okay if I miss that session.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the content. I want you to talk first on, the other thing I want to tell people is this year, WorkHuman is not happening in April. It's happening, or not this year, 2025. It's happening in May in Denver, Colorado. So if people are Woo-hoo! Wondering and you check out the conference, I'll have all of that in the show notes. But I know on the kind of what I like to call the pre-session before the big kind of major keynotes and when we got to see Brené on the Tuesday, on the Monday, I know you went to a really great session that day. So tell me more about that one, because I wasn't able to attend it.
I attended Erin Meyer's session on national cultural differences. She, among other things, is a professor at a university in Paris, INSEAD in France. And she has done a bunch of research around cultural differences based on nationality and had given some examples, the United States, Germany, South Korea, et cetera, Brazil, and had given differences or had shown what the cultural differences were around 8 specific areas: communicating, evaluating, leading, trusting, disagreeing, scheduling, and persuading, and had them shown them on a continuum. And what I really loved about it is, you know, we talk a lot about psychometric assessments like Myers-Briggs, like insights, like SDI or DISC, or even one thing that I coach on, which is emotional intelligence assessments. And, you know, when you overlay something like understanding cultural differences, when you're working in a diverse workforce or in a multinational company, or you have multinational suppliers and customers, this really hit home, because it's not just about personality type and preferences. There can be, of course, we're generalizing because there's outliers in every area, but there can be styles in these 8 areas that differ so much from your cultural experience that if you're not sensitive to and aware of it, it can cause conflict, it could cause lost customers, lost business, wars. I mean, it just can cause, and I loved what she talked about. I think I took 4 pages of notes on her session, ended up buying her book. I just wanted to get deeper in it. And one thing it reminded me of is a few years ago in WorkHuman, Michelle Gelfand was one of the speakers, and she wrote a book called Rule Breakers, Tight Cultures, Loose Cultures. I think it was called Rule Breakers, Rule Makers was the name of the book. Yeah. And she also talked about how different cultures are much more individualistic versus much more collective or stricter versus looser, and how that can impact. So when you're talking about culture, people in culture, culture in your organization, I think it's really important to have that more global view to say, what's happening here? Is this person really just, you know, a jerk, or could there be something more going on? And I really loved it. This one really stuck home with me.
Yeah, I think it's so important. It's the same thing. And there's a session I'll talk about a little bit later where it's talking about supporting women in leadership, and talking about just because someone's a woman doesn't mean they're having the same lived experience. And same thing here, when we have different cultures, bringing in that lived experience and how what would be appropriate in their culture and what's not necessarily appropriate in a different culture. I'm actually going to be working with a leader who's from Germany. And that's one of the reasons why, as he moves to Canada, he wanted a coach in Canada and not a coach in Germany, because he's interested in understanding some of those nuances that he might not necessarily be aware of that could be misinterpreted.
Oh, props to him for being self-aware enough to understand that there would be nuances and to get ahead of that. I mean, good on him for doing that.
Yes. I mean, yes, I'm a fan. I'm a fan. So let's get into the first session that opened up, which was with Eric Mosley. And a couple of things that jumped out at me that he said that I thought were really powerful. He talked about how there's an epidemic of loneliness at work. And I see a lot of this, and especially sometimes, again, good and bad that can come with remote. And I'm a promoter of remote and, you know, not one size fits all, but people can be feeling a lot lonely for a variety of reasons. And even Brené talked about this too, that even you could be there, but you're not necessarily there and connecting. Something else that jumped out at me, and I've heard this as well in terms of, you know, future generations, what younger workers want and what previous generations wanted is they're not necessarily thinking about is motivated around working up the corporate ladder and also being compensated the same, because they're not getting married. They're not necessarily having families. They can't afford houses. So the motivation looks a lot different. That's something that really jumped out at me. Another thing was around, with all of this going on and well-being, that we have to be very conscious of doing check-ins, and that managers really, really need to be cognizant of that. What were some of the things that jumped out for you?
100%. I was going to bring up the loneliness epidemic as well. This is something that I talk about all the time, and I'm seeing it more and more with remote. People love remote, but they're not appreciating that they're feeling disconnected or that their teams are feeling disconnected. So that jumped out at me. And yeah, I think you covered what I was going to talk about Eric's session for sure. The check-ins I wanted to say is that, you know, we talk a lot at WorkHuman about how leaders can be better leaders for their teams. And we can't lose sight of the fact that leaders also are feeling disconnected and lonely and need to check in. So if you're a leader and you're listening to this, make sure you're checking in with your peers, with your other leaders. Make sure that you're checking in with each other. And if you're the one that needs a check-in, say that, hey, you know what? Can we connect over a virtual coffee or an in-person coffee, or just to say a quick hello? Because I just feel that need for connection.
I think it's really important, because that's something that was highlighted in a lot of research during the pandemic, that leaders were actually being cognizant of being empathetic and compassionate with their teams, but it wasn't that they are, especially as they move up in the organization, there wasn't necessarily somebody doing the same thing for them and they were feeling burnt out. So I think that's a really valid point. And that's something that I see a lot with WorkHuman as well, right? Because I think that's another reason why people gravitate to this beautiful energy, is that you get to be with your peers and feel less alone. You're having the same struggle as I'm having. What are you doing to work through that? And some of people talking about some of their well-being practices or working with a coach and getting support because they want to have that sounding board, but there's different things that they have to be cognizant of when it comes to confidentiality as an HR leader.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about Brené. Brené always has so much to say. I really loved Brené's session because it wasn't a canned keynote. It was a fireside chat. So I really felt like we're hearing things that we haven't necessarily heard her say, that she was allowing herself to be very unfiltered and share what was coming up for her in that moment, which feels a lot, it feels on brand in terms of vulnerability, but then also just allowing herself to kind of share what's showing up in this moment. A couple of things that really jumped out at me with what Brené said was, one of the things she's noting both in her research and with her conversations, because she does do so much work in corporate and talking to a lot of different leaders in HR, was that she's seeing people as being very dysregulated, distrusting, and disconnected. And if we start to think about, because she brought in more of the AI, and if we start to think about artificial intelligence, if you are feeling dysregulated and exhausted, how are you going to have the mental energy to really address AI and where it's coming from? And so she said it was really important that we start to look for ways to be able to be regulated. I thought it was very powerful when she was talking about there's a lot of this fake closeness, but it's not actually close. That This one was also a big one. The number one shame trigger at work is irrelevance. Mm-hmm. So people are feeling, oh, this AI, all of a sudden it's going to take over and I'm going to be irrelevant. And that starts to create a lot of triggers. I've got some other things to share too, but I'm going to pause there and hear what some of the things are that came up for you.
I think we took the same notes because I was... But some other things for me, you know, she started this fireside chat by saying, this is our moment. And by our, she meant human resources, but I think she can extend that to others. This is our moment, because with the talk of AI, one thing she said that I made a note of is that we, HR, need to be the ones to direct how people will use technology and not let technology dictate how we will or how technology will use us. And that was something that I wrote, a note that I wrote, and I made note of. And one thing, when you, she was talking about being disconnected, dysregulated, and distrusting. Yeah. I wanted to share this. If you remember what happened, Brené's a big draw for WorkHuman. And a lot of the first timers that were there, when I was asking them what made you come to this, they said, oh, Brené Brown, I wanted to see her. And a lot of people had their phones up and they were videotaping. And good on her, man, I almost started applauding like a wild woman. She said, listen, I need to draw some boundaries here. She said, she turned to the audience. She said, I do not give you permission to record me. I'd like you to put your phones down. She says, because we cannot build community. We are here for community, she said, and community cannot happen with a screen between us. And there was a couple of things that I really applauded on that. Is one, is she set the boundary. She said, I don't feel comfortable with you recording me. I don't want you to record me. Who at that stature says that, right? I mean, that's what people are there for. And the other thing is, she was right. She really made us pause and think, yes, that fake closeness that you were talking about, right? We pick up our phone and we text people and we think that that makes us closer. But there is something to be said about face-to-face and eye-to-eye, you know, that she really brought home for me.
I agree. I was really impressed with her holding that boundary. It's true. You can't be present when you're videotaping. You're not there. You're not 100% connected to what's happening. And I think it's a really valid point. She also said, like, I get to decide what feels comfortable for me. And it is a fireside chat where she is sharing in that moment what's coming up unfiltered and getting permission around that. Yeah, no, I thought that was really, really powerful. And I like what she said around that piece too, that instead of resisting it, you want to make sure you're understanding this. But she said, like, this isn't about having like this complex understanding. So I am going to share a book she recommended. She talked about a book called Digital Mindset. I'm not sure of the author, but she said the thing she liked about this is it'll help you to understand the basic stuff. So then you can then influence it, right? You can start to influence those conversations. Another thing I thought she shared that was very powerful is she said, with this whole AI environment, what we need right now are not the knowers in the room. We need the learners in the room. We need mm-hmm. the people who are just going to listen and be open and ask different questions, because we don't know where this is going. Like, we don't have a playbook. And which also she started to talk about the differences between critical thinking and anticipatory thinking. Because mm-hmm. things are shifting all the time. And what does that look like to stay in that ambiguity, to stay in that openness, to, because what you thought something looked like a month ago, 3 months later, that could look very different. And so that is constantly shifting. And I'm sure, Angela, you've experienced this, because I've experienced it. You can feel the difference when you have the knowers in the room who are very clear, this is what it is. And there isn't that openness. And which I would say is having actually more of a fixed mindset as well, as opposed to when we have the learners and a growth mindset, and this is all shifting yeah. and let's explore this together.
100%. And she, to build on that, because I took the same notes as you did, she said, you know, AI cannot do deep thinking. Now I'm saying yet, and hopefully, but this is a human skill to do the deep thinking. And so when she was talking about anticipatory thinking, I've always called it like thinking through the unintended consequences. When you have something, think it through to the end. But I really like how she framed it. And then she gave a quote and she said, there's a space between stimulus and response. And in that space, there is a choice. And in that choice, there is liberation and freedom. And what she was trying to do is encourage us to decide between that stimulus and response, what is it that we want to decide to do? And that's where the humanness comes in for us.
Yes, I have that exact same thing written down, Angela. I love how much we think alike. It's so cute. The other thing that she brought up that I talk about this a lot, especially with HR leaders, but also the culture you're creating, HR should not be cleaning up the mess for leaders who do not care for people.
Yes.
Listen to this, please.
Said that. Like,
any HR leaders who are on this call, and I'm going to say it's not even HR leaders. This could be a leader who has leaders that are reporting into them. This could be a CEO. Listen to that. You should not be cleaning up the mess for leaders who don't care for people. There needs to be accountability.
Yeah. That one was such a profound moment. And in fact, in one of those hallway collisions that I was telling you about, somebody was telling me about stuff they were trying to make phone and clean up and deal with the scenario. And I said, remember what she said? It's not your job to clean up the mess. It was like a really profound moment.
Yes, exactly. To really hear what we're saying there about not cleaning up the mess. I know there's a lot of people who are listening right now and recognize how often they're firefighting. And what does that look to push that back on the other person to so that they're empowered and they're taking self-ownership and self-accountability?
100%.
Yeah, I love that too. So I'm going to share another session I don't think you attended. Just a couple of points from this one. It was an Advancing Women panel. So this one had Dr. Misha Ann Martin on it, Melissa Dawn Simpkins. She's from a company called the She Suites. And I want to share some of the names of these people because I suggest like go check them out on LinkedIn, connect with them because this was a powerful powerhouse woman. And then Julian Wright. So Julian Wright and Dr. Misha Ann Martin both work for WorkHuman. And then Melissa Dawn Simpkins has her own company and they partnered to do this research. And so they were looking at things around what does it look like to advance women. So I'm just going to share some of the highlights that they shared high level. So they said, we have to be cognizant of that there's not a one size fits all when it comes to women because everyone's having a different experience. Recognition is universal, especially for women who feel like they were passed over at other organizations. So they want to feel recognized. The queen bee syndrome, which was interesting. I hadn't heard this terminology before. So the queen bee syndrome is where women who treat men better than women. That was something that some of these respondents were talking about with this challenging environment because these women that were in this scarcity mindset. So instead of seeing other women as being working together and trying to get up the ladder or whatever that looks like to support one another, there was this scarcity mindset and feeling like that the zero sum, right? Well, if you win, that I can't win. And so it gets into this competition and then they start to be doing things to make it so that they're actually supporting men more than women, which I thought was really interesting. Mentorship makes a difference, especially higher levels of psychological safety. To avoid burnouts, finding your purpose can make you less susceptible to burnout and having radical prioritization.
Oh, I love that.
I like that too. I like that. So one of the solutions they're saying is if you want to make create opportunities for women to prioritize, you want to help them to pursue purpose. And the other takeaway was use recognition and rewards to make women feel valued, empowered, inspired, and create a safe space within your organization where women can convene, they can share with their peers, and they can mentor others.
I love it. I hadn't heard about the queen bee syndrome. I'd love to dig deeper into that. That sounds scary.
Yes.
I think I'm very lucky. I think I've curated my life to be surrounded by women and men who are very supportive of one another. You know, empowered women empower women.
Yes.
Have you heard that? So interesting that there's this scarcity. I mean, of course there's a scarcity mindset for some people because that's how they've experienced life so far and how they've been treated. So I can see that, but it doesn't have to be that way.
No. And then the fact that they were saying that these were the top things people were experiencing was very interesting to me. I can definitely say that my second job out of university, I experienced it. I didn't know it as the queen bee syndrome. And it was very, very difficult. You know, one of those situations where your boss thinks that you're vying for their role. And I wanted to continue to say, I don't even want your role. So there's no competition here. Like, I don't want it. I just want to learn and grow. And then I'm going to be out of here. But so I saw it in action, how damaging it can be.
You know, you just said an interesting thing is when an organization creates a competitive environment internally, so that they pit people against each other, right? To buy.
Yes.
And you're seeing this now. The company's going to name nameless, but a very Fortune 100 in the United States, the CEO is about to retire, and there's three potential successors for the CEO job, and basically they're pitted against each other, so they're, you know, dog eat dog right now. And instead of realizing your competition's actually external. Your competition is the other organizations that do something similar or who can take over. And so I could love to dig deeper into this topic. I love it.
Glad that I got to share this with you, Angela. It's great. This is why it's so important to talk to people who are in different sessions, because we get to share with one another. Okay. Baratunde Thurston.
Loved him.
Tell me what you think. Cause I loved him, but it was my first time getting exposure to him. So you start off sharing some of your big takeaways first.
Same. So I had not heard of him. He has a popular podcast called How to Citizen, and his talk was called How to Citizen, which grabbed my attention. But the one thing that he said, I mean, he said a lot, but the one thing that he said that was such an aha moment for me that I actually ended up coming back home and changing some things that I do is he talked about flight risks. And he said, a flight risk is a criminal who may not show up for their court date. So maybe in our humanness, we can update our language to describe an employee who doesn't stay too long. I am guilty of calling people flight risks. And in fact, I have introduced in several organizations a standardized flight risk assessment, which has been very good at identifying people who are potentially and then mitigating those risks. But he's right. A flight risk is a criminal who may not show up for the court. Why are we using that language with people? Anyway, I took a lot of notes, but that's one that really stuck with me.
Yes. I also was those times where once you hear it, you can't unhear it. And then you realize, oh my gosh, we are calling them flight risks like they're criminals. And that's what, when you know better, you can do better. Like it's all of a sudden you can, and I got to tell you, everybody in that room, there wasn't one person in that room who said, oh, I never used that term. Everyone was saying, I never thought twice about using that term until he shared that with us. So I thought it was a really, really powerful observation. Yeah, I think check out his podcast, because it sounds great. And he's has some shows that he's done too, which I wasn't familiar with. What are some of the things that I really liked that he brought up? I think speaking to the divisiveness that's happening in the world right now. And one of the ways that we need to share ground is to really be able to share our stories with one another. And through sharing our stories, it creates connection. And I have to say that I think it's so true and so powerful, because you can be feeling a certain way and triggered by somebody and their views. And then all of a sudden, if you slow it down and each of you share one another's stories, it's like all of a sudden this emotional connection happens very quickly, and you start to see one another in a different way. So this slowing down and looking for ways to really see the humans in front of you. And it also felt like, let's not assume the worst. Let's not assume the worst in others and take more time to really get to know who they are and what they're all about.
You know, the beauty of a conference like Work Human or any conference or any session you go, there's no point in going if you're not going to be able to take something away and apply it to your work or to your life, because otherwise you're just gone for a good time. Yeah. And so to your point that you just made, I did a keynote session just on Wednesday, and it was with a group of people who work remotely and had not met in person. And I did this icebreaker where they had to share something quite vulnerable with one another, but in a safe environment, as a way to break down, because the issue was around trust and collaboration. There was a lot of finger pointing and blaming. And so by getting to know, as you said, that person as a human, as opposed to just the coworker that's annoying me, then, you know, it just gets easier from there.
Yes. I'm so glad that that's the best way of being able to lock in the learning is by applying it really quickly. So I love that you did that, Angela. I'm not surprised. Okay. So we had a panel on AI. So that one was really interesting. I liked it because it was a safe space. There was psychological safety where I felt everybody on that panel felt very comfortable sharing their perspectives, and they had very diverse perspectives, which I love.
Yes.
So there was Dr. Joy Bulamwini. Yes, thank you, Angela. Kiana Schmidl and Rebecca Tweed and Andrew McCaffey. And so they had different thoughts around it. I mean, a couple of things that jumped out at me was we need to really be conscious of preventing irreversible harm to human beings when it comes to AI. Let's think about piling tools before you put it into production. That really landed for me. Look at it at impact versus intention. Like, you might have the best of intentions, but what was the impact? And AI governance is really important for future decisions and brainstorming and experimentation. What else really jumped out?
I'll add a couple of things. First of all, what I really admired about this panel is they did disagree with each other. And I want to say it got heated, but not in an angry way.
Yes.
They were very strong in their positions, and they disagreed with each other so respectfully. And you don't see that anymore, because you see, when people have a differing opinion, you see a lot of name calling, you see a lot of shouting or anger or walking away. They were very professional, and clearly they disagreed with each other. I loved how they handled it. They were so respectful.
Yeah.
And that's what we need. We need people to be able to respectfully disagree. A couple things that jumped out at me is Andrew McAfee was one of the people on the thing, and he said the way that people learn their jobs is not by sitting in a classroom, but by watching an experienced person. So the apprenticeship model. And then Dr. Joy said, and she wrote a book, by the way, called Unmasking AI, which I ran out and bought. She says we risk living in an age of the last expert. I wrote that down and I highlighted it. And what she meant by that was a couple of things. One is, if we are so reliant now on ChatGPT to write our job descriptions, to do the performance reviews, to write the stories, we are going to lose people who have skill and expertise in certain areas. We are just going to become bland and non-expert. We're going to rely too much on AI to do that. And that people really need to be intentional about how they learn with one another. It's not just what you learn in school. It's by watching, listening through osmosis. Oh, how did she handle that call? How did he deal with that irate customer? How did she close that sale? Like, you've got to hear it in order to learn it. And so I wrote 2 pages of notes on this one, and I just love this panel.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. I remember really resonating when they were saying that too, because it's like bypassing what happens with the experience, that you can't rush experience, right? So I get this when people come up to me and say, oh, I want to be a keynote speaker and I want to be in all the big stages today. And I'm like, oh, okay, you can't take from 0 to 10 years, right? Like, there's a reason why it takes time, because you're building that confidence, you're getting the experience, you're trying things out. But there can be a bit of this instant gratification where they want to go from A to Z, and I don't know, in less than a year. But I was resonating with that in the same way, in that there's these things that just happen through cross-pollination, through watching things, like you were saying, that if you're always like, oh, I'm just going to take this and copy and paste and do that, you're missing out on. And Andrew was actually the one that was speaking more to that one, which I appreciated, because I think people kind of felt like, oh, he was all the pro AI, and over here was, well, like, well, pro yet we need to be careful all this. But I think he was just, what I was hearing a lot of his messaging is, let's also be careful. And I do see this in HR sometimes, where there's this such a risk intolerance that they can't think outside of the box, to the point where you have this amazing candidate, but they come from another area, another industry, right? And then they miss out on these transferable skills. I was hearing some of this say that too, like, hey, don't be so focused on all the risks that it could be doing these amazing things to be creating breakthroughs in the world. And yes, there is a balance around how we handle the risk mitigation.
Yeah, he was definitely pro AI, but before the panel, he did a short little keynote opening session. And one of the things he said that caught me is, he said there was 5 principles he was talking about. And he said, algorithms generally make better decisions than people, based on some research he showed us. Mm-hmm. That surprised me. I would have thought the people did, but he said, but we can combine algorithms and people to make better decisions together in those areas that we need to. And that's an important thing to keep in mind.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you have people who are biased that are already putting this stuff into the AI, then you're just more biased. Like, not, which we have that to contend with as well. Okay, so I want to talk about Jeff Harry, and he did one all on play and psychological safety. He was super creative because he also connected it to Barbie because he has a love of Barbie because he grew up with sisters and all the things. But he was really, he was making some very valid, bold, strong points, and I really resonated with what he was saying. So I just want to talk first to his definition of psychological safety. So he really describes it as a place where employees feel seen, heard, and appreciated. Here's where he got very bold in advocating for what we need to do in workplaces, and I think in a very important and needed way. He was saying, like, listen, in a lot of organizations, work suck right now. And he said, just search TikTok. And I have to laugh. It doesn't, I see on Instagram all the time, like the memes and the videos, like I laugh because they're so true. And right. He said, listen, employees are feeling disrespected. They're feeling used. They're feeling exploited. And every year organizations become more and more productive, but the wages don't increase. And I you know, for speaking for employees, like they have some points around this. And he said, we need to stop celebrating narcissism.
Oh, yeah.
And right. We need to have more human-centric leadership models that need to advocate for what's right. He talked about a quote that I share a lot, that work culture is defined by the worst behavior tolerated. That comes from John Ameshi. And who are the managers that should not be leading people? And Simon Sinek says this as well. If you go around and ask people, who are the people that shouldn't be, who shouldn't be managing, who shouldn't be leading people? Everyone can answer very quickly who that person is.
100%.
So we need to do something to change that.
Yes, because we tend to promote the widget makers who make the best widgets and not the people that can be the best managers, right? You get rewarded for how many sales you can make or how many widgets you can make, and they don't look at your people practices or your people leadership. Also, I think we have a bias. We think that once we promote somebody to a manager, that they will automatically know how to behave, and they don't. It is a skill. Yes, some people are born natural leaders, but you can still build skills. And if you just assume that as soon as you get a manager or supervisor title or a vice president title, that you're going to know how to act, they don't, especially if all you've been rewarded for is being a great widget maker.
Exactly. And that speaks to what he even said right after. He said 82% of managers right now have not been trained. And that's the thing, right? Like, I think we also, organizations need to take accountability. It's not putting it all on the person. Because how are they set up for success?
100%. Right? Oh, I agree. That sounded like it was a great session. I'm sorry I missed it.
It was. It was really, really great. Check out Jeff Harry. So he's just talking about we need to make sure that we don't have accidental managers. And what was he saying in terms of what he wants to see more of is, oh, I love this one. I think you're going to really like this, Angela, as well. Instead of where we keep on hearing HR is a profit center. HR is a profit. HR is the cost center. He said, HR is constantly the profit saving part of the organization because they're constantly saving. They're saving lawsuits. They're getting the right people. They're keeping the right people. So I loved that expression. He said, instead of calling HR a cost center, it should be they should be described as a profit saving part of the organization.
I am putting that on a t-shirt. I love that. Oh, I love that.
Profit saving. And it's so true. I think this is, again, you know, where we have these conversations around like, what's the role? Like the role is doing super, super important things if they're given the opportunity. And we have, I think also it's important to have a CEO that understands how important this is. And there's a great relationship there.
100%.
Yeah.
A session I'd love to tell you about is Michelle Wise. Her session was called Reskilling, 5 Principles That Enable Working Learners to Thrive in an Uncertain World of Work. But here's what I loved about her session. I describe myself as a lifelong learner. I'm always taking classes. I'm in school. I'm getting certifications. I love learning. Like, give me.
Yes.
She talks about long life learning. And what she said was that now we're living longer. Mm-hmm. And so instead of just retiring at 60 and dying at 70, right? Yeah. People are living longer. And so people are working into their 70s or 80s, some of it out of choice, because you love work or because you think, what am I going to do for the next 20 years of my life? And some of that is necessity, because you might be in an economic or financial situation where you need to keep working. And she says, it's hard to imagine that the education we have in the first 25 years of our lives will sustain us for a 60-year work life. And this, I heard angels singing when she said that, because I was, you know, she said the model used to be learn, earn, retire. And now it has to be learn, earn, learn, earn, learn, earn, eventually retire. And I thought that that's so true, because one of the things that I talk about in my keynotes, in my workshops, in my coaching, is about staying relevant. And you cannot rely on education or skills that you learned 10 years ago, that you are still doing things exactly the same way. You have to understand, especially we're talking about AI, we're talking about, but even simpler things like, do you know how to use Excel? Like simple things, right? And so we need to keep learning if we want to stay relevant. And she talked about it a little bit in terms of, there's a lot of fear that's going on, you know, without getting into the politics, you know, we look at the political situation in certain countries, including ours, Kristen, and where you see the a lot of the conflict starting is people who feel that they're losing because their industry is going away, because their jobs are being lost, and they're very fixed mindset in terms of thinking, I won't have a job, I don't know how to do this new thing, instead of changing it to think about long life learning. I loved her session. She was fantastic.
I think that's such an important conversation. And you actually feel more fulfilled when you're doing that, because we want to continue to learn and hit our edges and be able to explore and do, like, our brains need, they keep us younger when we're doing that. And we feel so much more fulfilled when we're learning new things.
Yeah. So, and when I say I'm too old to fill in the blank,
yes.
My dad, 86,
yes.
Bought first laptop and learned how to use email. Please, if my 86-year-old dad can do it, anybody can do it.
Exactly. Agreed. Yes. We're not going to use that story. Issa Rae. So Issa Rae, I didn't have a lot with hers, because I'll tell you why. I was just soaking in all that is her, because I just loved her. Like, I loved her energy. I love that she's an entrepreneur, that she's got like five different things she's doing at once. I love that she listens to her intuition, that she, you know, proposed her show and they said, nobody wants to hear about that show. And then she went to, and it's like the most popular show. And again, don't listen to your critics and continue to persevere. But what I'm going to just summarize with Issa was, she said, being the ensemble can be really powerful. You don't need to be the star. Immerse yourself and soak up all of the learning. There's a lot to learn when you're in the background watching others. And I just think that's so true. Like, there's so many times where I'll just be there and watching and admiring and learning from somebody else. And I think sometimes there can be so much emphasis on getting there and arriving and being the star. And yeah. I really appreciated her humility and the way that she shared that, and how she's such a beautiful connector and brings people together and sees these, connects all of those dots. And I think it's so much of her. I talk about circling forward and circling back, like her ability to be able to circle back and watch and observe and learn from others.
Yeah. Like you, I didn't take a lot of notes because I was sitting back and just taking her in, but 100%, I agree with everything you said. I thought she was fantastic. I have to say, I wasn't that familiar with her work. So for me, I was more about getting to learn who she was and what she had to say. I thought it was fantastic.
Yes. Okay. So the last person I'd love to talk about is Cy Wakeman, and we won't spend quite as much talking about Cy, not because we don't love Cy, but if anybody is not familiar with Cy, I have an episode that I did with Cy two episodes back. So have a look and you can see that. And was around how to ditch the drama. So Cy and I spoke for a whole hour around what she's all about, but I also think she's amazing. And I love everything she does around reality-based leadership. So I still want to talk through a couple of things that jumped out at me with what Cy said. A lot of hers was, I think what I want to summarize is, just because somebody comes to you with the same, with a certain mindset, we don't need to keep them in the mindset. And there's so many things that you can do to shift them out of that mindset. Something that she said that I laughed so hard was when people are also so focused on like, what's the ROI? What's the ROI? Why do we have to care about the people? Why is culture important? And then she just said, and the way she said it out of nowhere, she's like, what's the ROI of your mother?
The mother. I wrote that one down too. I thought that was so good. So good.
It was so good. And it was such a great reminder. Like, can we just like, do we need to tell anybody that humanity is important? Like, do I need to tell you the ROI of humanity? Like, come on, people. So I really appreciated that. I didn't want to miss that because it made me laugh so hard. Being aware of, instead of post-traumatic stress, also post-traumatic growth in challenging situations. And some of the questions that you can ask, like asking better questions. So asking things about where do you need to evolve next? And I love this question. What needs to die for you to move forward? I thought that was a really powerful question.
There, I'm back.
Yes. Oh, did it freeze for a quick second?
It did.
Okay. So what jumped out for you?
I think we took the same notes. The what's the ROI of your mother? I wrote that and like circle. And, you know, she said, why are we talking about ROI on people stuff? But a couple of other things I wrote, because there was some good Q&A in between her session, in between her talk. And there was a couple questions that came up around her. What if we want people to help us? In context, she talked about giving people invitations and inviting them to come and accept whatever the decision. And she said, rules without relationships equals rebellion. So you have to have the rules, but you need to have the relationships with the people to say, you know, we need to trust each other on this. I really like that. And so she talked a lot about invitations. She talked about co-creating great workplaces and started with like, what great work do we want to do this year? What work environment do we need to get this done? And when do we come together and when do we work best apart? Because there was a lot of questions about hybrid versus remote working and sort of that conflict and polarization that's going on. And how do we address that as leaders? And I thought she handled that really, really well. And another thing, this, you know, sometimes she says things, you know, I'm a big Cy Wakeman fan, right? Yes. Like I'm a groupie. And she writes stuff and then I'm like, oh, I love the way she phrases that. I'm going to use that. And she said, if you're having conflict or somebody doesn't want to agree with something, she said, if we give this a chance, could it move forward? And if not, what other conversations do we need to have on this? And I thought, oh, that's such a mature and grown up way to have that conversation about whatever the conflict might be. I really like that.
Yeah. Also, I like that too.
Yeah. I also wrote about post-traumatic growth versus post-traumatic stress and how that works. And she talked about, you know, the modern leader, replace development with evolution. Evolution isn't about teaching people to be better, but to be better at being. And I really, that one stuck out at me.
Yeah. I like when she was talking about the modern leadership too. She says modern leadership is around loving people up, calling people up and asking connecting questions and appreciating your people, fostering curiosity, compassion, and co-creation. Yes, that was very, very powerful, which I think is a beautiful place. Yes, keep going.
You know, one of the things that she talks about in much of her books, like reality-based leadership, reality-based workplace, no ego, is when employees, like you said earlier, Kristen, like you don't have to keep the person in the same mindset. So when the employee comes up and says, why do they do this to me? You can ask them, why do you stay silent when they do this to you? And this is a big issue. Like, you know, I've been head of HR in organizations and employees will come up and say, you know, so-and-so keeps picking on me. Why does he keep picking on me? Why are you not speaking up about it? Why are you not letting us do something about it? So I love that she said that.
Yes. I think that she said, like, if you change the questions, you get better answers.
Yeah. Right?
Change the questions to get better answers. As everyone can tell, there's a lot to soak in at work humor. I think we could talk for 3 hours about all of this, but I really hope for everybody listening, these will also spark some excitement, some interest in you. You might look up some of these speakers and hopefully we'll maybe see you in Work Human next year. I will share in the show notes Angela's information and you should connect with her on LinkedIn and follow her and learn from her because Angela is amazing. Oh, and Angela has just frozen in this right moment. Oh my goodness. As I'm talking about how amazing Angela is, you have frozen for a second, Angela. Are you back?
Okay, I am back. Sorry, I am frozen.
You're good now.
Can you see me?
Yes.
All right. Yes. Thank you so much for the conversation. You're right. We could talk. I mean, it's hard to condense 4 days into 30 minutes.
Yes. 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 So I would hopefully we can connect with you, and we're happy to continue those dialogues. For everybody who's listening, I will have, like I said, Angela's info in the show notes. And for anyone who's more interested in learning more about me and the work that I do in the world, I would be happy to share. I will share that in the show notes. But just to highlight, I do a lot of one-on-one coaching, leadership training, and transformational keynotes around all of the stuff that we're talking about today, really how to create positive human cultures. And a lot of times it's also how to set your leaders up for success by really doing self-leadership. So starting leadership from the inside out and really building those emotional intelligence skills. Angela, thank you so much for being here today.
Love it.
And for everybody, wherever you are in the world, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. We're sending tons of love.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Please remember that meaningful change requires space and grace. Practice self-compassion and become the ripple. As you transform yourself, you transform your workplace and the people around you.